everyone, and welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation, and this week we've got a little bit of a treat for you. I met up with Ja'Cory Hayes at the coffee shop across from Toyota Stadium, and we had a long talk about this season and his soccer career up to this point, what it was like to get drafted. We also talked a lot about what it's like to be a pro and kind of the more meta things around being a professional soccer player and life here in Dallas with FC Dallas. So I hope you enjoy my chat with Ja'Cory Hayes. Hey, Ja'Cory, thanks for joining me today. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to come and talk a little bit with us.
No problem. Anytime. Anytime.
I want to start off. Let's talk about. Let's get the hard stuff out of the way first. Let's talk about that Philadelphia game and the loss there. The losing it a little bit towards the end of the game. What were your thoughts on that game? And have you looked at the film and learned anything from it?
Yeah, I watched the film personally yesterday. We had a day off, and today we went over as a team just some clips, things we can implement going in the future. But there's a lot of positives that we could take from it. Definitely a lot of things we could work on. During the game, it was one of those we were 1-0 up, and as the game's going down, you're like, yeah, we can get the 3 points. And then, they score. It's like, man, all right, let's make sure we get at least a point on the road or something. Just unfortunate that we gave up those two late goals. But, we showed a lot of promising things. We showed, we can, if we need to, we can defend deep and, hold teams away from the goal for long periods of time. Of course, it's not what we want to do, not the game plan going into it. We want to, be the one attacking, want to be the one on the front foot. But there's definitely going to be moments in the season where we're going to look back and be like, hey, we've gone through this and we can suffer and we can come out successful.
So that was your first start since your hamstring injury, right?
Yes.
What happened there? Did you just pull the hammy? Or
yeah, I went for that back heel and just felt something in my hamstring. And at first I didn't think it was anything of it, just like thought it'd be all right, and then tried to come back later in that week and just couldn't do it. So I had to go through the whole process of MRI and treatments and that sort of thing. And it kind of stinks to be out for so long, especially so early in the season. Got the first start in the first game, so just wanted to build on that. But you have to be smart and don't want another hamstring injury down the line or something else pulls or some other injury that you're out for even longer. So just had to be smart and worked well with the medical team. And, they did a good job getting me back onto the field in a timely manner. Hopefully that's all in the past and I'm 100% the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's a long season. You got time to kind of make sure that everything's right. So that's good. I'm glad you did that.
Yeah,
yeah, it happened actually. Like, my seats are right by where that happened.
Yeah.
You can kind of see in your face like a little grimace and then you kind of still walked and like, oh no, that's not good.
Yeah.
So yeah, man. Well, I'm glad that you are back and healthy.
Thank you.
I want to talk a little bit more about the recovery process. So when you get injured, they pull you aside and you train separately from the team.
Yeah.
So what's that like?
So I was out for 3 weeks. So the first 2 weeks I was just inside in the gym the whole time. So I never even saw the practice field or what the guys were doing. Just a lot of either mobility work or, so a lot of times, especially the first week, we didn't want to work on the hamstring directly. So it was a lot of working on my glutes and my core, strengthening everything else around the muscle, just giving that the hamstring time to heal. And the second week, it was more of the same, but then also incorporating a little bit more hamstring strengthening and then continue the core work. And then towards the end of the second week, I started doing power walking and biking. So a little
Did you go to the
more.
Mall with your weights and stuff?
Yeah.
Like the old people?
Yeah. I was some hand, like 2 pound dumbbells in each hand just walking around. but yeah, it was got a little bit more fitness in that way. And then the third week was, started ramping up a lot more of the hamstring strengthening and then kind of doing more on the field cutting and directional work. Just trying to get more comfortable. Like, all right, I can, push off of this leg with no problems, or if there were problems, then I'd tell them or whatever the case may have been.
Just get confidence in your own body.
Yeah. Yeah. But even then it's, towards the end of the third week, it was like, hey, I haven't even, haven't done a lot with the ball and stuff like that. Or, you know, it's one thing to know that you're going to cut a certain direction. Like, you know, the cone's coming up, I'm going to cut here. It's another thing in the game where someone's dribbling at you or something happens and you have to cut unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And so got more of that, you know, when I was finally clear, just being in the training sessions. But it's definitely a process. Like the first week I was back, it was still like, all right, like I feel good, but it's like it could happen again. But my body felt fine. Just mentally, I had to get over the hump of, you know what, I'm good. Like, I'll be all right. But it was, you know, luckily there were no setbacks and everything was all dandy. So, yeah.
So your teammates are out there learning that new system and refining it, right? Yeah. So did you feel like you were getting left behind whenever you're out doing the recovery, or how did you feel about that? Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely tough because they're fine tuning their craft, and, you know, I tried to be a part of all the video sessions that we had after the games. So I at least knew, I guess, after a game, what the coaches were looking at and what they were saying to the guys. Of course, I didn't get the day-to-day feedback on the field. But, you know, I just tried my best to do what I could within, you know, my capabilities. And then, of course, when you get back, you try to knock off some of the rust and just jump back into it. And, you know, you kind of just learn on the fly. And it wasn't too long of an injury where it's like, oh, man, I don't know anything in the system. But, you know, it's definitely an adjustment period for his coming back.
Gotcha. So kind of speaking about the tactics and the system. So I think it was in one of the games last year, Steve Davis was saying on the radio or on the TV call that he had talked to you about Oscar's system, and where playing defensive mid for Oscar is very demanding, where like he expects you to be here, then here, then here, then here. And then this year they've got what they're calling the triple pivot. Like, I don't know if that's what you guys call it, but that's what, you know, I guess us observers are kind of calling it. Talk a little bit about the differences between them, and is this one kind of harder to implement as a player, or how does it compare difficulty-wise?
Yeah, a lot of times with in the other system, it was like, go find the ball, you know, always try to be on it. Like, you know, you're the engine of the team, you know, we always want you on the ball, go find it. This year, it's I've had to learn a lot more, just being more spatially aware of, you know, my own teammates as well as the other team. So it's not necessarily always go towards the ball and go find it. It's sometimes it's about peeling away into the space and, you know, waiting for the ball to get to you. But there are definitely times where you have to go after it and go find the ball and get on it yourself. But there's definitely moments where, like, you're waiting for it to come to you because, you know, once it gets to you, you're the most dangerous person on the field. So it's definitely taken some time, you know, watch some film of practices and, you know, watch some of the, you know, other teams play the same system just to see how their midfielders, you know, handle different situations.
What teams are those?
We watched a lot of, like, Real Betis. You know, I personally like Barcelona, so I watch a lot of them.
A little Liga action.
Yeah, a lot of La Liga. Just teams in, like, that three midfield, 4-3-3 setup. Just kind of, because you don't want all three of you guys on the same side of the field. So trying to be that one that's patient and peels off into the space and, you know, that guy is hopefully becomes the most dangerous. But yeah, it's just kind of, it takes a lot of work because you naturally try to gravitate towards the ball to get on top of it. But it's a learning curve for sure.
All right. So speaking of the pivot, let's pivot here. And let's try to talk a little bit more about, like, your path to the pros, let's call it. So was soccer always your first love?
No.
Or did you have other sports that you played?
No, soccer wasn't the first love, but it became that. I played a lot of basketball growing up, played football, I played baseball. My parents actually thought I'd become a baseball player when I was younger just because I would stay up and watch, watch games and have the baseball glove on and stuff like that. But that kind of quickly fell off. Did like some karate. I just kind of did a little bit of everything. So I was always playing year round I was with the Boys and Girls Club when I was younger, probably like when I was 6, 7, 8. And then around 9 is when I started getting a little bit more serious with soccer. joined like a local travel team. But even when I joined them, I was still playing football, still playing basketball. By that point, I wasn't playing baseball anymore. I think I was, might have still been doing karate.
some on the field moves.
Yeah. Watch out. I was still ready to kick someone. But it was just like, as time went on, things slowly started to fall off. So like I was missing, you know, soccer tournaments for a football game and I wasn't happy. And I was, you know, I was like, no, I'd rather play soccer. So I quit football. Luckily for basketball, soccer was all like, that was the off season, and especially in Maryland, it's too cold in the winter to be playing outside. So basketball is prime time then. But I stopped playing that right before high school. I went to Dematha, so that's kind of a basketball powerhouse. So that's when basketball kind of fell to the side. Okay. I wasn't 6 foot. soccer started like gaining in importance. And, you know, once I joined that first travel team, I was there for like 3 years and then joined another one that was like a county away. And that was like a big move because like practices were like 45 minutes away. And then, jeez, you know, parents were, had to deal with traffic. And luckily there was another kid that was from my same county that moved with, like changed teams with me from the previous select team. So I had someone to carpool with. But yeah, it was definitely a lot more demanding in terms of travel and the competition. But slowly soccer started ramping up in importance for me. And turns out it all paid off in the end. But yeah, it was probably around that 12 year old range is when everything like really picked up for like soccer was like it.
Gotcha. So you're from in Maryland, but yeah, it's the DC area,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I guess so, Baltimore, DC.
Yeah. I'm from Bowie, Maryland. So I'm about like 25 minutes outside of DC.
Okay. So did you grow up as a DC United fan? Were you growing up around the time like Freddie Adu was there and stuff?
Freddie Adu was the man. I had, you know, one of those, it was like a Kraft mac and cheese soccer ball with one of Freddie Adu's like pre-printed signature on it. I'm sure like everyone from that DC area had that ball growing up. You know, he was huge. He was signed when he was 14. I remember I went to a playoff game with my dad when they were playing the New England Revolution in the RFK Stadium. Just a lot of special memories, you know, with DC United growing up. And yeah, Freddie Adu was a special one.
Yeah. Any other players that you kind of looked up to growing up?
At that time, it was like Marco Echeverria. But it was mainly Freddie Adu. That Ben Olsen was also playing. Trying to think of other players. But I was so young. It was more just watching the team than anything. But everyone knew Freddie Adu.
Sure. So you grew up a little bit. You decided to go to college. Went to Wake Forest.
Yeah.
What was your overall experience with college ball like when you were there? Like not necessarily just Wake Forest, but like your overall impression of the college ball system and your experience in it.
I had a very good experience with it. You know, going to Wake Forest, we tried to play a certain brand of soccer that was very attractive, possession based, and, you know, kind of mirrored the professional game. You know, on my recruit visit there, they showed, you know, clips from their past teams, but, you know, within those clips, they showed like an Arsenal clip. And it was like, you know, we want to play on the ground and, you know, have 20 passes to goal, and we want to be the one dictating the tempo with our possession. And it was something that appealed to me. Going the professional route out of high school wasn't an option for me. Coming out of the Baltimore Bays Academy, there was no professional setup. There wasn't a direct route. So, you know, college was beneficial for me to, you know, get playing time against older men, and also for me to develop physically, you know, mentally and off the field. It was an important 4 years, and I think it helped me out a lot. You know, there's a lot of kids going straight out of high school, or even while they're in high school, they're making the jump, and, you know, it's very good for them. You know, what if I was a couple of years later, maybe I would have done the same thing. But in my situation, it was, you know, the best choice for me, and, you know, I think I made the right decision.
Cool. So you were there 4 years. Did you graduate?
I graduated. So I did 3.5 years.
Oh, okay.
So I graduated right after my senior fall.
Okay. What was your major?
I majored in physics with a minor in math and environmental science.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That must have been fun doing homework and soccer practice and training and all that.
Days were rough, you know. It was definitely one of those, you go to school all day, go train, go hit the, you know, the study room and then go to sleep and try to eat in between there and get naps when you could. And then in the spring season when we trained early in the morning, you know, you train, wake up at 6, train at like 6:37. You know, right after that, you're sprinting from practice because practice always ran late. Coach always held us on the field a little too long. And
extra, you know, words of wisdom.
Yeah, all that good stuff. You have to run, get showered, run to your first class and try to get sneak breakfast in on the way to the class, and then, you know, try to get naps in between. And then in the afternoon, just whether you're go for a lift or maybe there was a film session, or I don't think we ever did two practices in a day, but you had to get your schoolwork done in between there and you're still tired from waking up early in the morning. So it was definitely on the go all the time and, you know, kind of stressed the time management part. So it was definitely a tough 4 years trying to balance school and soccer, but, you know, I think I made it work out.
Right on, man. I know that, you know, Reggie Cannon's family is all engineers and stuff, and you're a physics major. Did you come from a family of science people? Or?
Yeah. My mom was a undergrad in electrical engineering and then went on to get her law degree from George Washington. And then my dad would undergrad mechanical engineering and then went to Purdue to get his master's in mechanical engineering. So some big shoes to fill academically.
Some smarty pants on this team.
Yeah, some smart guys here.
All right. You ever think about, I mean, this kind of skipping forward to the few, like to the current, but do you ever think about the physics and the math behind the game and look at any of the analytics or any of that stuff that some of the people are starting to apply towards the game? Do you ever take a look at that?
Yeah, there's in one of like our online sites, there's some numbers that, you know, for film, there's some numbers that they give us, and I definitely take a look at those. You know, you can't really argue stats. There's no bias. It's just the numbers. So you definitely take a peek at that, but it's also, you know, there's a lot of eye tests. You just kind of watch the game, and there's things that the numbers, at least the numbers that they have there for us, can't really show you. It's definitely just, you know, not necessarily taking physics or math from it, but it's just, you know, cognitively thinking about the game, you know.
Problem solving and critical thinking, exactly. On the fly. Yeah,
exactly.
That's how, kind of what I took from my computer science degree is, like, I didn't use a whole lot of it for a long time, but the problem solving, like, yeah, sticks with you like forever.
Exactly.
Do you feel like Wake Forest did a good job of preparing you for what you ended up with in pro life? Like what the actuality is now that you're a pro?
Yeah, I think it did. You know, like I said, the style of play kind of mirrored it. So it was, you know, one of the knocks against the college game is, you know, the direct play or the style of play, or it stresses too much of the running or being too, you know, guys bench pressing all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, those are definitely factors that will help you in the professional game, being strong, being fit. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about your technique and, you know, passing and, you know, moving and your skills. And I think Wake Forest did a good job preparing me for that. Just, you know, I think there's a lot of college programs that do the same thing in terms of, you know, trying to prepare their guys for the next level. That's not necessarily the direct, you know, goal of the teams. You know, the coaches obviously want the programs to win in the college aspect, but
got to look out for their jobs.
Yeah, they got to look out for their jobs. They have their boss to please. But I think it helps them with recruiting when you can say, like, hey, like, we had a couple guys go pro, so you can go pro here as well. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to go pro at a high school. You can, you know, come through us and still make it in the end of the day. But I think Wake Forest did a good job preparing me.
Awesome. So you graduate and you enter the draft. You were slated to go a little bit higher, but you fell to 18th with Dallas. So What goes through your mind? What was going through your mind in the draft? And had you, like, was Dallas even in the picture for you prior to that? Or had, like, what was your exposure to FC Dallas?
Yeah, I mean, I watched a few FC Dallas games because, you know, I'm good friends with Kellen, and, you know, we were roommates at the national team, youth national team level for a little bit. And, you know, it was just kind of kept an eye on him because he was always playing, and he was like, oh, like, you know, he's someone my age and, you know, like one of my peers playing. It's like, oh, that's a, you know, feels good for someone like me to be like, oh, like I can make it too. But also just trying to support a friend. So that was about the extent of my knowledge of FC Dallas. But, you know, at the combine, you're interviewing with different teams, and I interviewed with 13 of the teams, and Dallas wasn't one of them. So when I saw their name on the board, I had like, yeah, that's definitely not the spot I'm going to. I guess I'm going to go after that point.
Yeah.
You know, they said what, like, midfielder from Wake Forest. I was like, yeah, there's no one else that fits that description. But yeah, it's definitely a little nerves going through at the, like, at the draft, because you're sitting there and you see all the guys getting their names called, and you see them going up, and, you know, they're hugging their mom, their dad, whoever they came to support. You know, it hurts a little bit seeing them go before you, but, you know, at the end of the day, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, went to Dallas at 18. I'm still happy that I got drafted. I'm still a professional player at the end of the day. So no matter, you know, who I got picked up by, I still accomplished my dream, my goal. But yeah, it's still a great day in my memory. I had my mom and my sister there, and then my cousins. Oh, my mom and my sister were next to me, and then my cousins were in the general admission crowd.
Screaming for you.
So yeah, she's the one that screamed. Everyone thinks it was my mom, but it was her that screamed. So that created a little funny moment because everyone went dead silent and she was screaming out there.
That's fun.
But it's definitely a cool moment to see, you know, like, your family celebrate your success and made everything that you went through growing up, when all those struggles, you know, all the sacrifices they made to see you make it.
Yeah, because it's not just your dream. It's like your parents put a lot of effort into that. Your family
poured a lot of energy into it. Yep.
So it's you know, it's a culmination of all your efforts. That's pretty cool. So you got here and didn't quite make the 18, and then you ended up going on loan in Tulsa. I actually from right outside of Tulsa.
Okay.
So I never went to any Roughnecks games growing up, you did. You went to some when you were there. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what life is like when you're training with a team and then you're traveling up to Tulsa to play that game on the weekend.
Yeah, I put a lot of miles in my car that period of time. It was a tough experience when it first started. It was definitely one of those, like, man, I'm getting loaned out. That was kind of one of my goals, not to be loaned out, was that first year. You know, I want to be part of the games with Dallas. You know, I'm a Dallas player. I want to be part of these games. But, you know, it ended up working not in that way. You know, when they first loaned me out, it was like, man, I guess Dallas doesn't want me. I guess I'm not good enough for the MLS, that level. But in the end, it was just all about, you know, getting games. You know, you can train all you want, but you're not going to know exactly what you need to work on until, you know, you're in these games and, you know, you're like, the competition, you know, tries a little bit harder than they do in practice, you know, those little things. And, you know, have to focus for 90 minutes straight versus, you know, 5 minutes and the coach blows a whistle, or you're doing drills where you only have to focus on one aspect of the game. You know, it's everything that you're working on during the week comes, you know, you show it on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a part I was missing, especially in the beginning of the season, not getting those games with Dallas. And, you know, once you're getting these game moments and you get some sharpness, and then your training starts getting better, and, you know, they work hand in hand. So it was crucially important for me to get those games at Tulsa.
Was it lonely?
You know, I ended up making some good friends over on the Tulsa team. The drive was lonely, 4 hours.
That's some good podcast listening time.
Yeah, I wasn't, or still not into the podcast, but I played a lot of Kendrick Lamar's DNA CD came out then, and Tyler Creator's Where the Flower Blooms. I'm messing up that title, but that CD came out. So I played those on repeat a lot. So, you know, I know all the words to all those songs. And then finally got like an aux cord for my car so I could, you know, play some music and not play, rely on CDs. So the drive wasn't ideal, but, you know, at the end of the day, it was the best of both worlds because I still wanted to train with Dallas just because it was a higher level, you know, playing against, you know, the guys that I want to be playing with and against on the weekend. So I need to train against them, but I was still able to get games on the weekend. So yeah, the drive sucked, but it was probably the best situation that could have been. And then I made some friends at Tulsa. So that while I was there, it wasn't too lonely. I hang out with them, play some 2K or, you know, just hang out with them instead of being like alone in the hotel or in one of the apartments.
That's good.
So yeah, it was, looking back, it feels like such a long time ago, but it was definitely a worthwhile experience.
Okay. So you get your first start or not start. Was it your first start against the New York Red Bulls?
That was my second start.
Second start.
Yeah, I started away at Kansas City was my first start. Second game of the season my first year. So that was that's a tough one to start out with. at Kansas City is not the easiest place to play. But yeah, against Red Bull is that was my first minutes in a long time.
What do you take away from that game? Because if it was you had 30-something minutes of and we were all like, this kid's showing some good stuff.
Yeah,
and
37 then, minutes.
Then the 37, you remember it.
Yeah.
what do you take away from that? Just like discipline or concentration? Like what?
You know, I just went into the game, you know, I'm just going to leave it all out there. You know, I haven't had many chances this year and I'm just going to try to make the most out of, you know, the start I had. And, you know, it was definitely a combination of a lot of excitement and a willingness to try to, you know, show that I belonged in the league. So yeah, it was definitely some discipline, just learning, you know, when you're playing on a yellow card, you know, I mean, you hear all the things, but it's different when you're actually in that situation, but playing on a yellow card, just kind of being more smart, being smarter and, you know, kind of knowing that you can't go into the tackles like you did before. You know, it was kind of rough. I feel like if I was a more of a veteran player, I wouldn't have gotten some of those, you know, calls, or maybe the referee wouldn't have been so quick to pull the trigger on me. But, you know, it's definitely a learning experience being a young player and knowing what to do in that situation. You know, maybe it's like one of those, hey, let the guy have it. I live to fight another day as long as I'm on the field. You know, I'll win the ball later. Don't try to lunge in and win it right at that moment. So it was definitely just a learning experience, and you know, still something I carry with me. You know,
hey man, you can watch soccer any weekend and see some people that have played the game a really long time that haven't seemed to learn that lesson.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned earlier that you were friends with Kellen, and were y'all like once you joined the team, did y'all get tighter?
Yeah. So, you know, while I was in college, you know, I think I may have saw him maybe two times while I was in college on, you know, went to Michigan to train for a little bit. But yeah, I became tighter once I got to Dallas. I was actually like rented a room out of his house. So we were roommates since I got here until when he was traded. So definitely became tighter, and, you know, I was roommates with another player, Aaron Guillen, on the team, my first year. So he was another roommate in the house, and, you know, he moved out and went to North Carolina. And then Chris Reeves was a roommate last year. So it's definitely...
a revolving door installed there?
Yeah. Right now it's a little lonely.
By yourself?
No one came in when they left. But, you know, it's definitely, you know, brothers for life. You know, you wake up, go to training together. You know, drive, carpool. You know, you end up watching the same shows or playing video games, or you know, you're just hanging out with them constantly. It's it kind of just put me in the mindset of college again, you know, just you're with your dorm buddies, you know, you go to minus the school. So minus the worst part of it.
The guys I lived with in college are still some of my best friends today. So
exactly. So
like, I can totally relate.
It was exactly like that. And so, you know, I miss those guys, but, you know, they're off playing elsewhere and, you know, furthering their career. So,
let's kind of take a step back and talk a little bit about some of the meta, I guess you could say, of being a pro. So how much of your life is planned out for you by the team?
All of it. You know, I tell my family, days of the week don't mean anything to me. Today's Tuesday. it's just whether I have practice, it's an off day, or it's a game day. So it's really, sometimes I'm driving and it's like, man, like there's a lot of traffic today. And it's like, oh, it's Monday. Like, you know, that makes sense. But yeah, it's totally controlled by the team, and, you know, it's our job to, you know, be prepared for the next day's worth of training. So, you know, I finished training this morning and then start, you know, lifting weights or getting treatment and getting the ice bath in and make sure you're eating right.
They have one of those cryo chambers for the...
No, not on site at least, but there's one we can go to that's like off El Dorado.
Okay.
So we, you know, get that in and, you know...
Cryo chamber party.
Yeah. One at a time. But yeah, it's pretty much just train and then get ready for the next days of training or the game the next day. So it's always just focused on soccer, you know.
How much training do they give you, like PR training, to handle talking to the media? Because a lot of you guys are able to just come up with answers off the bat and aren't fazed by people just sticking a microphone in your face and asking you questions. Or coming on podcasts and just having a conversation. Yeah. Like, how much training does the club give you, and how much of that is just you guys being good communicators?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's just guys being, you know, comfortable in front of the microphone and answering questions and, you know, trying to say the right things. No one wants to be that the new hot issue or whatever, the new sound bite.
You don't want to get called into the coach's office for that reason.
Yeah, you don't want to be that new sound bite. but yeah, they kind of mentioned in the preseason just kind of some do's or don'ts, not too long. I feel like there are definitely longer meetings in college. You know, Wake tried to prepare us for it because there'd be like maybe one reporter, especially towards like the tournament time or ACC tournament time. There'd be like a few reporters from the local Winston-Salem Journal. But not too much training, just still, you know, I think a lot of just intelligent guys and, you know, they can articulate their points pretty well, and hopefully you don't say the wrong things to, you know, make people mad. But I think all in all, we do a really good job.
Yeah. I mean, as a relative newcomer to all this, I'm that's one of the things I've been the most impressed with. And I was always wondering, you know, is this just the guys, or is there somebody giving you all some training? But
yeah,
that's really interesting.
There's no big egos on the team, so you won't get Zlatan answers out of anyone, but
you're welcome.
Yeah.
That's his answer for everything.
Yeah.
All right. So being a pro, it's a job, right? It's just like I go to work every day. You go to work every day. But you love the game. What are some of the kind of the hard parts of the job that kind of just kind of annoy you?
Kind of annoy me.
On your day-to-day job?
Kind of annoy me. Ice baths kind of annoy me. they hurt a little bit, but they got to be done. You know, sometimes the running sucks. I don't want to do that. But all in all, it's like you said, it's something I love, and it's, you know, it's probably the best job that I will ever have. You know, it's get to just play a sport for a living, and not many people can say that. And hopefully I can make it last as long as possible. But it's definitely, you know, it's definitely some stressful parts that, you know, you guys can, you know, mention them. You guys mentioned them as well, whether there's competition at different positions or, you know, trying to always be your best. It's tough. It's a long season, and you're playing a lot of times to, you know, always be at your best or, you know, always produce at a high level. It's very difficult. And of course you're going to have dips and in your performance, but it's important that mentally you stay strong. And, you know, it's easy for the mentality to drop. And once that drops, it's kind of hard to pick yourself back up. But yeah, all in all, it's probably the best job you can have. Yeah.
You can see the smile. You can't see the smile on his face right now. He loves this show. So when you go around town and go out, do people recognize you, or do people recognize really any of the teammates? We're sitting in a coffee shop right now, and nobody seems to.
Yeah, we're across the street from the stadium too. I mean, every once in a while, I'll get someone that will recognize me. It was harder, you know, not harder. When I was living with Kellen, whenever we'd go to the mall or go anywhere, you know, he would get recognized, and then there'd be a few people be like, "You play for the team too, right?" And it's like, yeah. So it's like, he was definitely a lot more recognizable. But yeah, there's every once in a while you'll get someone that will know who you are.
Do you think that relative, I guess we'll call it an anima. Do you think that Elmer Fudd? Like, do you think that that's a good thing for the team as a whole, to like kind of take some of the pressure off?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot different than, I guess, like in Europe. You know, it's something that, you know, Reto mentions. I asked him about it. It's like, yeah, like some in Europe, it's like anything you do, it's like in the newspaper, it's in the tabloids. You know, it's kind of like our equivalent of basketball and football here. Mm-hmm. But it is nice to, you know, just be able to go in, do my job, and go home, chill, or, you know, go to a restaurant and just. I'm just not to worry about people like me
shoving a microphone in your face at the restaurant.
Yeah, I'm just Joe Schmo, and you know, it is nice. I'm sure that pressure in Europe also provides, you know, players with like more incentive to do really well, or else you're going to deal with hecklers.
Yeah.
But it definitely makes it a little bit easier on the mentality. Just like, you know, you're not having to relive the past game if someone's not bringing it up to you all the time. And you know, this, you know, I deleted Twitter just to like not have to see anything. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, you know, it's nice to just take a breath and step away from that space and not have to think all the time about it, and just kind of just relax, so that when I'm in those moments and ready to perform, I'm not stressed out or overworked. It's like, no, I choose to be like in this good space and this in good headspace to be able to perform. And, you know, I want to go play.
I think we could all probably use deleting Twitter.
Yeah. I think it's just sometimes just too much information and then consuming other people's thoughts. So there's definitely times where, not even just soccer, just like either political or just societal, whatever it may be, I was not really forming my own opinions on stuff. I was only consuming. I would get the information and consume other people's opinions on it versus.
And then you see that opinion enough, and like it starts to be your opinion. Like, but then
exactly,
where did that come
from? It's like, I want the news, and then I'll inform. I'll have my own opinion about it versus consuming the opinion, and then I get the news. It was just too much for the on my brain, and you know, I feel, you know, stress free, and I don't even think about Twitter anymore. It's kind of nice and refreshing.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you go home and chill, and you just kind of go out. What do you do for fun? Like, what are you passionate about off the field? Off the field, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy reading. So, you know, my goal at the end, you know, as I get older, I can't really say grow up anymore. As I get older, it's, you know, I want like one of those, you know, offices with like a big giant bookcase, and like someone's like, "Oh yeah, you read all those?" And it's like, "Yeah, I read them. Like, yeah, these are all my books, you know, leather bound books, you know, maybe not leather bound.
The ladder there. And everything.
Yeah,
like the rolls and stuff.
Exactly. You know, I want one of those things, not coffee table books, like things I've actually read. I think that'd be really cool. So I enjoy reading a lot. I'm kind of in the process of cutting down binge watching shows, just because there's no one to binge watch with. You need that commentary, though, you know, someone to bounce jokes off of as you're watching the shows. So I kind of missed that without the roommate right now. Shout out to Chris. We'd always binge watch shows. he always provided great commentary. he's over there in Colorado Springs. So we talk about shows we're binge watching, but, or, you know, the last thing we watched was The Last Kingdom on Netflix. So we were talking about that, but I guess Game of Thrones coming up soon. We'll be talking about that soon. But yeah, binge watching shows, I'm kind of getting off of that wave. So yeah, just a lot of reading and, you know, maybe pop on the random TV show, but, yeah, we'll figure it out. Life post binging shows.
There you go. So. I mean, I guess you spend all your morning outside, so you don't have to go outside and get the fresh air. Mom used to say,
no,
you know,
it's actually stay inside. It's I've got enough time outside.
Gotta get that good old AC.
Yeah. Gotta milk that up when the summer comes. Yeah, or it's already here. So
what would be something that us fans would be surprised to know about you?
I said this at the, I don't know if we like the media day, the first, I don't know if, they actually released it Dallas, but, I can play the euphonium.
The
baby tuba.
Baby tuba. Yeah. I was in marching band.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
I have to play the flugelhorn.
Yeah. So I can play that. So I don't think that's been documented anywhere. Or I don't think the fans would have known that. So yeah.
You still have one or just,
My parents sold it. So it was at my house back in Maryland. Yeah. But yeah, I played it from fifth grade through 12th. So yeah, I have a lot of experience playing that and, you know, played it at don't want to toot my own horn there, but I played it at a pretty high level at Dematha. So it was, definitely one of those life skills that, you know, probably won't go away.
Yeah. I mean, the things you learn in band and doing that kind of like structured activity is the same as any of the other, you know, organized things that you learn a whole lot more about life than the actual thing you're doing.
Yeah. So. It was like another sport. Yep. And, you know, I definitely practice it a lot less than I practice soccer or studied. So I don't think my conductor would like to hear that. But
we won't talk.
That was years ago. We've moved on past that. But it was definitely really cool going on other trips. You know, I had a lot of friends that were in the band as well. So it was definitely another time to hang out with them. And
yeah,
you know, it's looking back, it's some, you know, music is tough to create. You know, it's, you know, 40, 45 guys all trying to make one song sound beautiful. And it's like, it shows you just like, you know, one guy won't make it, but, you know, one guy can definitely ruin the show. So it's like, you know, trying to carry your weight and, you know, find yourself within this big puzzle piece and make something beautiful out of it.
It's a really cool way to put that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. And now it's like, even listening to the music, I start hearing things in the background. It's like, oh yeah, like it's subtle, but like that was
did you catch that arpeggio?
Yeah, yeah. It's like that's a pretty important part.
Yeah,
like, it makes everything sound good.
All right, last one before I let you go. I think I saw an interview. I believe it was with Men in Blazers with Kellen, where he was talking about, you know, he kind of likens himself to Blaze Matuidi. Like, do you have any players that you kind of look up to and you want to emulate whenever you're playing, or
he's Matuidi?
I think he said that. I mean, I could have misheard it. I have to go back and find it. But do you have, regardless whether I'm preaching fake news here or not, like, do you have any players you want to emulate, or are you just Ja'Cory Hayes?
Yeah, I mean, I want to be Ja'Cory Hayes, but, you know, it's all the time. It's learning from other players and players that are better than you. I feel like I've done that my whole life, whether it was looking up to an older kid in the academy team and stealing one of his moves, or it's like, oh, I've seen him in this situation, maybe I can do it in this situation. So it's definitely, you know, I try to watch some Paul Pogba, you know, and, you know, can't go wrong with watching any of the Man City midfielders or Barcelona midfielders. You know, I always looked up to Xavi and Iniesta growing up. That was a huge phase for me in terms of my soccer development. Was, you know, I think my dad bought Gold TV for that Gold TV package. And, you know, there was always Barcelona reruns on, and I would watch games I knew exactly where they were passing. I memorized the game, essentially.
Oh, you got to see this movie. Yeah. It's on right here at the 51-minute mark.
I'm like, Dad, I'd be like, it'd be a long, I remember specifically, there was a long ball to Iniesta one time and he controlled it. And I mean, to my dad, he just controlled it. And I was like, no, did you see, like,
how he did it. Like, he like kind of froze the defender and gave himself more time, and he could pass it right after. And he's like, "What are you talking about?" And
yeah, you can appreciate the subtleties.
I rewinded it. I was like, "Yo, you didn't see this?" It's like, yeah, it's just all these subtle things that you pick up watching these guys, and you know, hopefully you can file them in your subconscious so that when you see it in the game, that it can, or in practice, you can bust them out. But you know, it's tough to emulate, because those are the world class, those are the best of the best, and hopefully, you know, I can steal a little bit of something for some of their magic and reproduce it myself.
All right, sir. Well, thank you so much for stopping by and spending your time talking to me, and hope to see you out there on the field.
Yeah,
hope so. I won't be on there, but you will, and I will be watching.
So. Hopefully that situation occurs.
All right, have a good one.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Dallas Soccer Show with Dustin Nation and Tristan Vick. And that was my chat with Ja'Cory Hayes. He's such a happy guy. Like, he had a smile on his face the whole time and is really just infectious. And I hope that you were able to enjoy that conversation as much as I was, as much as I did when I was having it. Before we go, just want to let you know, you can find us online at DallasSoccerShow.com. You can find us on Twitter as @DallasSoccerShow with no E. And you can find us in all of your other podcatchers, so be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Take it easy.